Meeting of the Government Operations and Elections Committee will come to order.
Okay.
Representative Murray.
Madam Chairman, I will move the approval of the minutes.
Representative.
Yesterday's meeting.
Murray moves approval of the minutes from yesterday, February 15th. Any changes? Seeing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. The minutes do prevail. Okay, we are back to House File 1975. I had moved the bill to be recommended to pass and be re-referred to State Government Finance. And we had one testifier yesterday, and now I will let you present your bill, Representative Graskowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair and Committee, House File 1975 is another part of PELRA, which is Chapter 179A. And this bill relates to the state government's ability to contract and the ability for Governor Dayton's commissioners in their agencies to be able to have the flexibility, nimbleness and the adaptability to be able to fit their resources properly into the type of work that they need to have carried out by their agency to serve the people of Minnesota. The bill, members, is actually, I mean, very simple. There are two sections that the bill amends. Both of those sections relate to our preferences that have been written into this chapter for current employees to the agency actually has to certify that there aren't current employees that can currently do the job or there are not past or laid off employees that could do the job before they entertain the idea of contracting. So it's a mandate actually placed upon the agency, and that's really the case in each of these two sections. There's three particular sections that are repealed. The first of the 16C.085 is really an exception, no longer necessary. 43A.047 really is along the same line. It has special preferences for current employees, similar thing with 179A.23. So I'll stand for questions, probably, I'm guessing, Madam Chair, after we hear the rest of the testimony.
Thank you, Representative Graskowski. Does anyone have any questions for Representative Graskowski at this time?
I do.
Representative Scalzi.
Thank you, Ms. Chair. I do have a question for you, Representative. Do you know what is the dollar figure, the current dollar figure, say for 2010, that the state of Minnesota is spending on contracting, outside contracting?
Representative Graskowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Scalzi, I do not. I'm really not sure.
Representative Scalzi.
Thank you, Ms. Chair. Representative Graskowski, have you ever seen this document? Minnesota Biennial Budget Professional Technical Contract Report.
Representative Graskowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't recognize it from here, Representative Scalzi.
Representative Scalzi, do you have something that you could pass out to?
Well, I don't. I just obtained it, but there is a report.
Okay.
Thank you, Ms. Chair. And I'm just wondering if the offer of the bill has any idea of what the state of Minnesota currently spends for contracting. Just a guess.
Representative Graskowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I do not, Representative Scalzi, and I'm not inclined to really guess. I would actually reference the report probably that you have in your hands.
Representative Scalzi.
Thank you, Ms. Chair. Well, actually, the figure, according to this report, is $394,593. And I'm just curious if the representative has an idea of how much his bill or how much he intends his bill to add to that figure, which is paid by the taxpayers of Minnesota for outside contracting services.
Representative Graskowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Scalzi. Representative, I don't intend for the bill to have any direct, provide any direction to the state budget or to the agencies in how much contracting they will or will not do in the future under a situation where the bill was adopted into law. This bill actually provides Governor Dayton's commissioners the ability to make decisions around what is the best fit for their particular agency going forward, given the resources that the limited resources that the legislature provides them, for them to work within that framework to be able to best provide the best quality services to the people of Minnesota.
Representative Scalzi.
I'm wondering, as your bill travels along, would you be willing to look at these figures, maybe look at the trend? Because I would think this is going to help you in your bill. You may be asked this question again in another committee, to look at the trend of where we're going, because it isn't always a way to save money, and certainly facing a deficit like we are, we should be looking for ways to save money rather than increase expenditures in various departments by contracting. It's not like you can contract, I mean, this is my opinion, it's not like you can contract out and save a lot of money always, because certainly people who are outside contractors, they have to pay their taxes, they have to pay their health insurance, they have to pay their own pensions. So it's a cost that isn't always really inexpensive for the state. And what I'm assuming you're getting at is maybe trying to save money by going to an outside contractor. So I was hoping we could have a debate about the price of contracts and how it would change, how it might change the state budget, whether to save money or to spend more money. Because that's something we should know as we work on our budget. We've got a deficit coming up, projected deficit next budget year, and certainly these are very important things that we should be discussing, and maybe you should get a little debate going in your next committee. Would you be open to that, to looking at a report like this and maybe identifying the trends?
Representative Roskowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Scalzi, as I mentioned, definitely I will. Yeah, I'm very interested in reading that report, taking a look at it. But I would remind you that it's not the legislature's role to decide what specific areas the agencies contract in and which areas they don't. Those are decisions left up to the agencies. And, you know, they may an agency may find more contracting or less contracting to be in the best interest of their agency, you know, and I'm sure that those are decisions that they have done over time, and this would further enable their ability to do that. That's really all the bill does.
Thank you. Representative Winkler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Druskowski, I have a bill I've introduced that includes some provisions requiring contractors to disclose as part of the contract where the jobs are going to be performed that they're contracting to do. In other words, both whether the work is going to be done in Minnesota or whether the work is going to be done in the U.S. And it doesn't say, you know, it doesn't create a mandate. It just says that full information has to be made available by contractors about whether the job and the work and the money that the state is paying will stay in state or whether it will stay in the country or whether it will be shipped offshore somewhere. And I'm wondering if you'd be open to an amendment, obviously not today, it's not prepared, but to apply that disclosure requirement to your bill.
Representative Roskowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Winkler is certainly interested in learning more about that and talking to you about it. It on the surface, it sounds like, again, providing more confining limitations mandates to our agencies, but if it's something that's workable within the bill and isn't too constricting to the agency's ability to be nimble and respond to the different factors that they need to respond to do the best job for the people of Minnesota, certainly be interested in looking at with you.
Madam Chair,
Representative Winkler.
Representative Druskowski, I think the point is, I don't know if it obviously requires disclosure, so there's information gathering. involved, but I guess the point is we know with state employees that by and large, I mean, some might live in Wisconsin, I guess, but by and large they're going to live in the state of Minnesota. They're going to spend money in the state of Minnesota. They're going to be a boost to the economy here. And if we are sending state tax dollars to contracting organizations that are going to ship the work to other places, we're not going to get the benefit of that here in Minnesota. We're not going to have those workers employed and spending money and helping the economy. So it seems to me that before we make contracting decisions like that, we should know some of the impact. And that's the whole idea behind that disclosure, is to understand what economic impact we're going to have through this contracting. And so, I don't think it's a restriction. It just provides more information for us to help make a better decision. But anyway, I'm guessing state government will be the location to have that, and I will have an amendment ready for you.
Okay. Representative Hornstein?
Thank you very much, Madam Chair, and very much along the same lines of concerns that Representative Scalzi and Representative Winkler have expressed. I did some legislation a couple of years ago that was, in consultation with MnDOT and others, AFSCME, and signed into law by Governor Pawlenty. And, the gist of it is, let's really go through a process before we contract out to really see if we're actually saving money. And we've done some preliminary, there have been some preliminary studies done, and it's not always the case that we're saving money. And so I think this kind of, myth that's out there that somehow contracting some state services out that are traditionally done by public employees actually saves money, the job is done as the same way or better, is not always, in fact, often not the case. And so, I don't know if you're aware of that legislation, bipartisanly done. I think it's worked pretty well so far, and again, that would be part of the conversation going forward. Are you aware of that? It related mainly to MnDOT, so that you're not on transportation, but it's out there, and I think it's good legislation.
Representative Kelsey.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Hornstein, it sounds like, and I do remember a little bit about it. Your bills were. They were about half a pound apiece, I think. those big policy bills, but
It was in one of those.
It sounds similar to the spirit of Representative Winkler's idea, and certainly interested in looking at that. But given the way we have what is in law now, agencies, if they do have a particular worker or workers that have the ability to do a particular type of job. Or people who are laid off who have the ability to do a particular type of job, the agency doesn't have the ability to even entertain the idea of contracting right now to even begin to have that comparison. So that's what this bill aims to do, is to remove those restrictions so that the agency can actually entertain that discussion.
Thank you.
Representative Scalzi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess, I like Representative Winkler's idea, and I hope that bill gets a hearing. I would go further. I would like to prevent, for instance, as an example, if you want to go to Lake Itasca and stay in a cabin there, you call on the phone, or this was my experience in the past. I don't know if it's the same. But you talk to someone in California, and they're the ones who determine who take their rentals, and they're the ones who do the work. So somebody in California is making the money and spending it in California. I don't know if it's still the same, but it was a few years back. And I'm just concerned about offshoring jobs if there are people here that should be doing those jobs instead to a communist country like China. Does your bill prevent, for instance, offshoring reservations or any type of that type of work that could be done online or by phone to a communist country like China?
Representative Druskowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Scalzi. There's not any restrictions or directions to the agencies, at least within the context of this bill. I haven't scoured the rest of law to find out if there is or not. But under those circumstances where they do where they do contract now, there aren't any directions that I'm aware of to those agencies under current law. So again, this bill and the changes in this bill to law would not have any effect on those decisions or those implications, if you will.
Thank you. Representative Raskowski, I have a question for you. I'm just wondering, in current language, I know you didn't put this in, obviously, because you're trying to take it out, that it says no current state employee is able and available. That doesn't say a lot to me about qualified or the quality of service. If it seems to me if it were something highly technical and we're just having any state employee do it, it seems like there could be some issues there. Are you familiar with what is meant by able?
Madam Chair, I haven't researched that either yet, but certainly will be. But as you can see, the agency doesn't have the ability to even make that call or to consider, those influences or those capabilities that you talked about.
Thank you. Okay, I'll move on then. Representative Quam.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Druskowski, who pays for government?
Madam Chair.
Representative Druskowski.
Representative Quam, the taxpayers of Minnesota pay for government.
And who
Representative
do the...
Quam.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Druskowski, who employs the, the commissioners, in fact, us?
Representative Raskowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Quam, the taxpayers of Minnesota employ the commissioners, and they elect and pay our salaries.
Representative Quam.
Madam Chair, being, second year freshman, when I first came in, I asked about generating a similar piece of legislation to what Representative Winkler was talking about. I basically asked that we take into account when we bid work out that if someone is employed or based in Minnesota, paying taxes in Minnesota, that in effect we get back a portion of that, and that it would be appropriate when a person looks at, bidding out a contract, work, whatever it may be, that actually the same dollars or even a little bit more dollars from a Minnesota bid could be in effect a net lower cost to the state, and I was informed that already was being utilized in government. So I'd like to invite Representative Winkler to work with me to look into that and see if we could generate something that would allow that into the matrix, because frankly the commissioners and the departments are paid for and work for the citizens and provide services to those citizens need to have appropriate options and flexibilities. Now, Representative Druskowski, as long as your bill does not direct that they have to contract out, bid out the work and accept that, and it allows them the flexibility and choice to make the best fiduciary and service choices for their bosses and the citizens of the state, I support this bill. And is there anything that is not permissive but prescriptive in your bill that would require them, if they seek these bids, to actually bid it out? Or are they allowed to use their judgment, their knowledge, and all the different factors to make the best choice for their employers and for the taxpayers of the state?
Representative Druskowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Quam, there is not, the bill would not leave any prescription in those areas that you talked about. As a matter of fact, would allow Governor Dayton's commissioners to exercise their full and informed judgment to utilize the resources that they have, the information that they have, to do the best job for the citizens of Minnesota, regardless of what forms those particular arrangements, whether they were current employees, past employees, or contracts, may be.
Representative Quam.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The Representative Druskowski has allayed my concerns with this bill.
Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess what the point that you brought up about quality and the ability to do the work, there's that goes both ways, whether you contract it out and whether you get the quality you demand. I think you have a little more control of that if the people are working for you, and if they're not. Harkens back to when I worked for Public Housing Authority, and HUD was our major funder from Washington, and they couldn't understand why we here in Minnesota needed 3/4-ton pickup trucks and plows on them, because they didn't need those in Arizona. And so one of our enlightened managers took and figured out, costed it out, and even buying the trucks and employing the people and paying their wages and their benefits and everything else, it was cheaper for us to do that in-house with better quality control than having contracting it out. And so, I mean, I guess the question I ask here is, what is the purpose of this bill? I mean, right now they can't contract it out if there's people on board that can do it. If we're going to contract it out and lay people off, that ends up being a cost to the state of Minnesota for unemployment insurance. And now you've got people not working and you've got somebody else doing the work, and we have no guarantee that the work is going to be done in the same quality or with the same type of oversight that we have. And plus, that employee may not just be doing that one thing. They may be doing multiple other things that now we lose that employee. We don't have these other things that we're able to do. I guess my question here is, why are we doing this? Is it just so we can contract out work and get rid of state employees? Or are we doing this with the idea of saving money? Then we should be looking at, as what Representative Winkler talked about, whether by doing this we're going to actually be saving money or going to be costing more money. Sometimes you contract it out, and an anecdote that I, from my employment that in the past, is that we were looking at healthcare, and the healthcare providers can give you, you know, they may send you an RFP and lowball it so they get the employment or they get the job. You eliminate your employees that you've got, and now we've got you by the short hairs, and we can raise the price whenever we want. And that's kind of what they were trying to do, and they actually even said that when they had their RFP for renewal and they were looking at contracting to a different company to provide healthcare services. And they looked at us and said, well, we can't do this because we underbid this so that we get the work, and we've lost money on this contract. Now we've got to raise the price so that we can make money. Well, you know, that's something they do too to you. So once you no longer have the people that will able to do the work in-house, they've got you, and they can squeeze as much out as they want. So I guess that's a concern I have here. What is the reason why this bill is there? Are we trying to save money for the state, or is it just a philosophy that all government employment is bad and we have to get rid of all of it and give it all out to contract it all out where we lose control?
Do you want to comment on that, Representative Druskowski?
Madam Chair, thank you, and thank you, Representative Nelson. You know, this bill aims to remove what is included in law, which is some micromanagement, if you will, of the agencies, and directing and limiting them and their ability to even look at some of those costs or consider a comparison in certain situations. So this would actually allow some of those discussions and considerations to happen, where in circumstances where in current law they can't. They aren't even allowed to begin that process.
Thank you. I'm just going to interrupt for a second here. I'd like to introduce and welcome the 7th grade students from Bachman and Dodge Middle School. They're participating in the Minnesota Historical Society's Voice of the People, Your Role in Minnesota Government Tour. So let's welcome them. Welcome. We always like seeing young people here learning about all the exciting things we do.
Madam Chair, I might add, too, they look very sharp today.
Yes, they look very sharp. You're dressed very well. Okay, do we have any other member questions right now? If not, we can open it up to some testimony. Okay, we'll start with Carolyn Jackson. Oh, it's the next bill. Okay, we'll start with Bob Johnson, Teamsters.
Thank you,
welcome
Madam
back
Chair.
To the committee.
My name is Robert Johnson. I'm here representing Teamsters Local 320, which is approximately 11,000 government workers. As I've listened to the questions that have come before the representative, the author of the bill, you can clearly see that this bill has not been well thought out. There's a lot of vagueness to it. I had hoped that Representative Kahn would have been here. I have some institutional recall as it applies to contracting of services. Back in the 80s, when I served in the House of Representatives, it was a hot-button issue. But guess what? It wasn't an issue to take the contracting away. It was to stop contracting because of the amount of money and the lack of oversight caused the legislature to do a very serious, in-depth study as to what was happening to state taxpayer dollars when it comes to the issue of contracting. And it was identified that we were not getting the bang for the buck. I don't know what able means. I don't know what available means. I know that the state paid out $300 million on contracting for services. Those services are either professional or technical, or they're a service contract. But nevertheless, it is something that I think this bill needs to really be slowed down. I just would hope that members can see the seriousness of this legislation and not support it. I would call for a no vote today on this bill rather than having it proceed out of this committee, because this is the appropriate committee that provides the oversight on the issue of contracting. And like I say, we're very concerned about this issue. Yesterday on House File 1974, there were a lot of people here and they testified. But we could have had just as many people here today on this bill. I think that it's incumbent upon you to look seriously at this legislation. Representative Salsky was very accurate in her concerns, and I'm glad you brought that report. I am aware of that report, and anybody that's going to be doing any contracting, as in this bill, really needs to do their homework and be able to respond to these questions and concerns that your members have. And so with that, I would conclude my testimony, and I would respond to any questions that members may have.
Mr. Johnson, you did say something that kind of triggered my thought. You served in the legislature.
Yes.
And when was that?
1986 to 1996.
Yes, I thought for a while. Was this language in statute when you were here?
My memory, Madam Chair, is that my recollection is this is the language that was implemented back then that this bill would strike today. This was the result of a lot of hard work amongst the bipartisan group of legislators back in the late 60s, or late 80s, excuse me, that created the law that said that state agencies needed to do a little bit of homework.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions from members? Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Johnson, does this language prevent the state from contracting out or from looking at contracting out or even studying the fact that what the cost-benefit analysis of contracting out is? Or does this just say that we need to look at, as part of that, whether we have state employees that can currently do that work?
Mr. Johnson.
Madam Chair, Representative Nelson, that's a good question. I don't know if I'm able to respond to it now. I would want to look more closely at it. But again, I think you're raising the issue that many members have today, that there's a lot of questions regarding this one-page bill. It has significant repercussions. Again, I would remind the committee of what we heard here this morning, that there's $300 million in contracting. And the state needs to do a better job of oversight, in my estimation.
Madam Chair.
Madam Chair.
Representative Nelson.
As I said, repeat the question. I wasn't talking about the current bill language. I'm talking about the current language that we're trying to strike.
Oh, okay.
Does that prevent, currently prevent, and if we're doing $300 million, I think the answer would be no, because we're currently contracting out $300 million worth of work. Does the current language that's in statute that the bill is trying to get rid of prevent the state, our commissioners, our departments, from looking at contracting out work? And other than the fact that they have to make sure that we have don't have people that can currently do the work, does it prevent them from looking at it, from studying it, from doing a cost-benefit analysis as to whether we should be doing this?
Well, the bill repeals a law that prohibits a state agency from entering into a contract for services with an outside vendor if the current state employee is able and available to perform the services. I would say no.
Thank you. Madam Chair.
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I Representative Nelson, as I read the bill and look at Subdivision 2, it says, before an agency may seek approval of a professional or technical services contract valued in excess of $5,000, it must provide the following. And we go to 1.19. In addition to paragraph A, the agency must certify that no current state employee is able and available to perform the services called for by the contract. So in those situations where there is a state employee that is able and available, no, they can't go forward in contract from that situation forward. Could they go through a cost-benefit analysis? I guess technically they probably could. Is it good use of their time at that point? Probably not.
Thank you. We'll move on to our next testifier, Richard Krajewski. Welcome back to committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. My name is Richard Kajewski. I am the Public Affairs and Communications Director for the Minnesota Association of Professional Employees. Just to respond a little bit to what Representative Drazkowski said in his testimony, this isn't a bill that eases the mandate on state agencies that Governor Dayton has appointed commissioners to. I don't believe we'll hear testimony today, and I'm guessing in the next stop we probably won't hear testimony either. From any of those agencies saying they're having difficulty in contracting out. What this is a jobs-killing bill. Minnesota currently has the 10th leanest workforce in the country. We have about 8 state workers per 1,000 residents in the state of Minnesota. We rank 37th out of 50 in that area. About 8 cents on the tax dollar goes to a state employee salary and compensation. This isn't what we call a fat workforce. The Economic Policy Institute in 2010 did a study that showed for every 100 public sector jobs that you cut, you're going to cut 30 in the private sector as well. This will result in a loss of jobs. And not only does it eliminate jobs, it jeopardizes recruitment for employment when retirements have increased in the state of Minnesota. Our average worker right now is approximately 48 years old. And it becomes increasingly difficult to recruit qualified employees to the state of Minnesota. And when I talk about qualified employees, we need to all ask ourselves, who do we want taking care of our veterans? What kind of training and liability could we put on the citizens of the state of Minnesota when we try to outsource positions like corrections caseworkers, probation agents, zoologists, OSHA inspectors, a job that we all kind of affiliate with government, that keeps the workplaces safe, who keeps track of our violent sex offenders, our lake water, our forestry, our state parks, forensic scientists at the BCA lab that we represent. And the list goes on and on. I represent approximately 425 different job classes. They're unique. They're all college educated. And one of the big things, big reasons they come to the state of Minnesota is for job security. This isn't a money-saving bill. In fact, Representative Simon, who's watching me attentively, passed a bill, of, I think, 5 years ago. And it's on lines 2.15 to 2.17. And that bill prevents the state of Minnesota from outsourcing jobs that they're currently paying unemployment benefits, severance packages for. That doesn't make a lot of sense, and I don't see how that saves money. Last week, this committee heard a bill on an equitable compensation study that was authored by Representative Keith Downey. And we heard testimony from the Taxpayer Association that they evaluated 41 job classes. Members, I personally am here today representing 425 different job classes, most of which you can't match up in the private sector. And if you think that it's simple to say, well, we're just going to trust our commissioners to determine what they need to outsource and what they don't, that's what we do today. It's not a perfect process. It's cost the state a lot of money in the past. Most of you are familiar, at least somewhat, with the Health Match program. It cost the state tens of millions of dollars in wasted money. And I'll tell you, it was 17 MAPE members who put their jobs on the line to finally end it. When an assistant commissioner, despite telling a Senate committee that the contract was severed, went back and renewed a contract for 11 individuals from Health Match for $110 an hour to work on something he told the Health and Human Services Committee in the Senate had been severed and was done. That's why this language is in here. And in fact, I think 5-6 years ago, those of you who are involved with Department of Transportation work more than I am are probably more familiar with it. They do a cost-benefit analysis on contracting. And the results, and maybe Representative Hordenstein knows better than I do, but the results that I'm familiar with were the hiring of additional state employees to do the work and less contracting. So this isn't about saving money, folks. This is about getting rid of state employees. This is about eliminating jobs for the state of Minnesota. And we contract out, Representative Scalzi, we've done research. We've held press conferences on the numbers that you have in the past. They're accurate. And what's even more interesting, members, is take a look at how much of that money, and I don't know from the current report that Representative Scalzi has, but take a look at how much of that money doesn't even go to the state of Minnesota. They're companies from outside the state of Minnesota. So with that, members, I encourage you not to support this bill, and I'm happy to stand for questions.
Representative Murray.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For Mr. Kajewski, you mentioned in your testimony that the 425 job classifications you have are not available in the private sector. Therefore, I'm having trouble understanding why outsourcing would be a problem if we can't outsource, or we can't outsource if the jobs are not, people aren't out there to fill them. Could you explain yourself there, please?
Mr. Kajewski.
Madam Chair and Representative Murray, not all of those jobs are unavailable in the private sector. We represent accountants, for example. Those are available in the private sector. In fact, CPAs are much better paid in the private sector than they are in state government, for example. You can contract out for that work today if there's no one available to do it. We are already trained in doing it in the state agencies. And so to suggest that all of those jobs are unavailable in the private sector, some are, most are not, and I'm basing that on the study that we heard testimony on last week from the Taxpayer Association, and a lot of those job classes are unavailable. So do you want a company coming forward saying, well, I can monitor all the inmates on intensive supervised release out in the community, maybe a neighbor of any of ours, when they haven't done it before? Do you want to assume the liability and the obligation that goes along with contracting out? And that's an important question that everybody has to ask themselves. There's things that state employees that I reference in here take care of. and you have people who work at nursing homes. Do you want to just switch over and contract out to take care of our veterans? Is that the answer? That's, in a sense, a possibility under this bill.
Representative Murray.
I guess I would just state, as far as taking care of our veterans, I think whether we're insourcing or outsourcing, we all better be making sure that we're doing that. And I would think anybody in state government would be darn sure that we're going to provide the best possible care for our veterans and would not outsource if there was even the remote possibility that that was going to happen.
Well, Madam Chair and Representative Murray, I would concur with what you just said here, but I would also remind you that we don't just hire people to come into state service to take care of a veteran or to help someone get a job who's unemployed or to work in our state parks or to work at our fish hatcheries or anything like that. This requires training. These people work with state government for a long time.
Thank you.
Representative McFarland.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Scalzi, are you able to share the report that you have with that maybe the committee administrator could give us the link to that or report that all the committee members will be able to have that? Thank you.
Mr. Kajewski, I have a question for you. I'm wondering if I'm looking at line 3.9, and it talks about for purposes of paragraph A and B, employees are available and qualified if, and the second one says, are on layoff status in classes that can do the work in question. And I'm not really sure what would be in a class. Do you have some information available so I could see what, I don't know what a job classification would be. I don't know how many different professions would be in one classification. I think you said there were 425. Is there somewhere that I could review that and see what types of jobs are in each classification?
Madam Chair, members, all job classes in the state of Minnesota are listed on the MMB website. I think you have to go into the, you may have to click into the, I forget if it's the employer or the employee, left-hand column on the top of the website. I'm going off of memory here. But they are listed under job specifications. And in that, it's listed alphabetically. You can do a search for any job that's currently in the state of Minnesota and what the requirements are for those jobs. Beyond the job specifications, for example, someone who works on financial accounting for MMB may be doing something completely different than they are at one of the Dakota County Technical College, for example. So, or someone who is an information technology specialist 3 may be doing network work in one agency and may be doing web programming in another agency. What you have in agencies with those positions beyond the job specs is a specific position description within those job specs that applies to each control number that a position in the state of Minnesota has.
Thank you.
I'm not confusing
you
more.
No, I appreciate that. What I'm trying to get at is I'm wondering how would one know if a job classification, another job classification can do in the work? How could I look at it and figure out, I mean, how would I know if a mechanic in one area is in a job classification that could do the work in another area? I'm just trying to figure out if they're just listed by job, that doesn't really help me understand which other classes of jobs could do the work. I mean, if you're a plumber, can you do the work of a mechanic? How would I know how do I understand 3.9, and how would a agency know which other job classifications can do the work is what I'm trying to kind of figure out.
Madam Chair, members, I'm not sure that I read it the same as you do, and maybe I'm wrong. I think the bill, if you're still referring to lines 3.8, 3.9, and beyond, mm-hmm. I think, number one, they have to be doing the work in question. So if they were hired as a mechanic, they would be doing
a mechanic,
not plumbing work. And if they're on layoff status in classes that can do the work in question. So, for example, the example I gave you just a couple minutes ago, for an information technology specialist 3, if they're doing network work versus computer programming, most state agencies should be getting resumes and applications from employees, just like the private sector does. That's how you get hired in state government. And they have a resume system online. They spit out every resume so they all look the same with different, you know, if you have more qualifications than the next person, yours would have additional qualifications on there. So they can look at that if they so choose, but this really focuses on and what has been practiced in state governments to look at the actual job class that they're working in and the work that they have performed for that agency while being employed.
So it'd be as specific as a mechanic to a mechanic. It wouldn't extend out under this current language to other areas?
Yeah, the only time you would get into other areas if you had I don't think this exists, but if you had a general mechanic and a diesel mechanic. It's possible that the diesel mechanic can do general mechanic work. I don't know. I don't know anything about mechanics. But that would be up for management to make that determination whether or not that person was capable and qualified to do that work.
Okay. Thank you. Representative McFarland, are you on the list?
I already did.
Oh, you already did the question. Okay. Representative Simon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, it is true that lines 2.15 and 2.17 were consist of language that I put in there, and Representative Drazkowski, I won't take personal offense that you're trying to cross out something that I put in statute. And no one has to worry about hurting my tender feelings. But I think it's worth noting that the language here is relatively, in that particular provision, is pretty mild, which is why I suspect that it was bipartisan. Governor Pawlenty signed this into law. He didn't see this as particularly burdensome or onerous for his agencies to follow, because it says that, you know, if a job has been eliminated within the last 4 years, those folks are on layoff status, that the agency should first consider whether those former employees whose skills are now required again after the position was eliminated, consider. That's all they have to do is consider whether those former employees could do the job and hire them back. My question to you, Mr. Kajewski, is since we passed that in 2007, do you know of any problems with that? Have agencies kind of bristled at that requirement? Has that been particularly onerous for administrators, either in this administration or the last one?
Mr. Kajewski.
Madam Chair, members, I'm not aware of a single issue that's ever been brought forward, and there has been plenty of layoffs in state government to draw that language into effect. I do know of situations where it's been used successfully, and I also would just reiterate, it was language that Governor Pawlenty signed into law. I believe it was under Commissioner Badgero, and there was extensive work done with the Department of Administration and their staff who work in the contracting areas to get this language so that everybody was satisfied with it.
Representative Simon, I actually have a question for you, if you could, before you follow the question. You just said, you talked about it being a job in the last 4 years, but the language says the agency will not contract out its previously eliminated jobs for 4 years. So to me, it looks like they're not going to outsource for 4 years from now, not looking back 4 years. Could you clarify that?
You're right. I misspoke. It is for 4 years, but it's a previously eliminated job, not necessarily whether it was in the last 4 years. You're right about
okay.
that.
Okay. And proceed with your question.
Well, I guess it's more of a comment. I mean, I think that agencies should have some reasonable flexibility, especially if the capabilities don't exist in-house. I really do. And that arises from time to time. We've heard it in this committee and elsewhere, but it just seems to me in terms of the cost savings, and I wish we had better numbers on this, but when we hire employees and we spend time, effort, and money, not only for the hiring process and the training and retention process, but kind of the nurturing process and the ongoing education process, it makes sense to me that if we have the capability in-house, that absent something really extraordinary, like an extraordinary showing of a cost savings, which would override any other value we have in these employees, you know, it's reasonable to have some guardrails in place, which it seems like we have in place and that have been enacted on a bipartisan basis. I'm not sure why we would want to undo those unless we can point to some real demonstrable benefit in terms of money or something else. So that's my worry here. When you have the capability in-house and you've invested a lot of time and attention in these folks who can do these jobs, sometimes with very specialized skills, I don't know why you would get rid of that kind of peace that we seem to have achieved over the last few years. So that's why I'll be voting no.
Representative Simon, so just for clarity on that section, because I don't recall this in the past, so would the eliminated job have to, would the agency have to hold the job open for 4 years? So if there wasn't anybody that was available, they'd have to hold it off for 4 years before they could fill it?
Well, Madam Chair,
Representative Simon.
That's a good question. The language says that they would have to first consider the same former employees, and I think that's important language there. It's not mandatory. They'd have to consider them and look to see.
Will not contract out its previously eliminated jobs for 4 years.
Right, without first considering the same former employees. Not that it's a mandatory hire, but if Joe or Mary or somebody like that was their position was eliminated, and then suddenly there's a need for that, The state would have to at least certify, among the other things on this list, that they have presumably, I don't know, Mr. Kajewski, you could talk about how it's worked in practice. Presumably they'd have to inquire, they'd have to talk to them, see if they're still available. Maybe they have another job that they've gotten somewhere, or a job offer pending, and they're not interested in it. But the idea is, if you had someone who was qualified to do the job, the position was eliminated, but now the need arises again for their service, that at least that's how I understand it to have worked in practice. But Mr. Kajewski, maybe talk about what it means to consider.
Madam Chair, members, I think just to provide clarification to you, Madam Chair, I think what might help you out is the 4 years really comes from, I believe almost all of the state labor contracts have a provision in there that requires management to maintain a layoff list for 4 years. And so there is some claiming rights within there back to state service for positions that they previously held. And I would just state that that's really where that four-year piece comes from. But Representative Simon is correct. This just requires them to consider. I believe those layoff lists, once they're offered a job back to the state of Minnesota, if they decline that, they're removed from those lists. I don't believe agencies' lists are extensively long by any means. I don't believe that they're overly cumbersome to maintain. However, if they are laid off and they're within the unemployment time frames and stuff, it's very, very expensive. And I think it would be interesting for you, Madam Chair, to actually ask an agency who has done extensive layoffs what the actual cost is. It is extremely expensive to lay off employees in the state of Minnesota.
Okay, I'll move on to Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a quick observation. Maybe this type of provision is something that should be addressed in collective bargaining agreements instead of by state statute. We had some conversation about some of those provisions yesterday. Perhaps this is something that's worth taking a look at and putting as a collective bargaining item.
Do you want to comment to that, Representative O'Driscoll? Anyone? Mr. Kajewski?
Madam Chair and members, certainly, I mean, this is something that we could address in collective bargaining. It would be much more difficult because it's not really a term and condition of employment. Whereas when we bargain over wages and health care benefits and vacation time and holidays off and that sort of thing, those are actually terms and conditions. Those are things that you're promised when you're employed by the state of Minnesota, and that's what we really collectively bargain over. This would be a difficult piece. The state's it doesn't matter what administration we're talking about. The state's not overly excited about negotiating statutory language provisions in the contract.
Okay, thank you. We'll move on to our next testifier, Jack Davies. Welcome to the committee, and if you could just identify yourself.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Jack Davies, and I left the state senate in 1982, and this is the piece of this bill is something I invented, so it goes back that far, although my authorship or the sponsorship does not show up in the official legislative history at this point. What I'm speaking to is the approval of these outside contracts by the Commissioner of Administration. And the problem we were concerned about, or I was concerned about, was the problem of these consultants who produce for us these fancy reports with a fancy cover, and we'd open them up and discover that the consultant had simply gone through the bill and changed Michigan to Minnesota and Detroit to the Twin Cities or whatever, and then charged us an arm and a leg for the work they'd done. And then we were also moved by an observation by the chief executive of one of the major corporations that there is no substitute for internal competence, meaning you can't get from outside what you should be getting from inside. And so I invented the idea of having at least the Commissioner of Administration looking at these consultant contracts. Now, it's apparently turned out to be such a good idea that over the years it's grown in its reach. But I come back because I'm proud of that particular idea, and I just don't want to lose it. I also come back to suggest that a visit be made to the Legislative Reference Library to look up a report by the Citizens League way back then on the problem of consultants. And I think that you will find that very enlightening in some of the back steps that are represented in this bill. Thank you. I didn't think there'd be any question. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Is there anyone else that would like to testify to this bill? Any other questions from members? Okay, seeing no further questions. Oh, Representative Hancock.
Not to delay it, but actually it's a question for Representative Simon. In looking at the language that you were talking about, and excuse me for my voice, it's not that painful, but it's just hard to enunciate. When we consider, I'm not an attorney, I know you are, what does the term consider mean in terms of hiring someone back whose job has been declassified, so to speak? In other words, what I'm concerned with is an agency perhaps looking at this person and for maybe personal reasons decides that he doesn't want to hire this person back, as opposed to actually qualification reasons. And are the agencies, the agents, I'm sorry, putting themselves in liability form of that decision? And the question on just what is considering in a legal definition.
Representative Simon.
You know, Mr. Chair and Representative Hancock, that's a great question. I'm not sure I know the answer to that. I in practice, I'd be interested if Mr. Kajewski could talk about what that has meant in practice and what kind of the common usage is of that word to me, what it means, and I don't know if it's defined elsewhere in statute, and I can't remember the details of the debate from 2007. This has to have come up. I just don't remember. It could be that there's some other definition, but just I'll take a shot at common usage. It probably just means must take a serious look at. But what you're saying is interesting. Would there be liability if the criteria they used for considering and then not hiring were impermissible criteria, you know, basically under the Human Rights Act or something else? I just don't know. I'd be interested if Mr. Kajewski or others could comment on, practically speaking, what it's meant since 2007. Is he still around?
He's back there. Do you want Mr. Kajewski to come down and answer that question?
If you could shed light on the the question.
And Madam Chair, I just don't remember. I think this did come up when we passed it in 2007. I don't happen to recall the back and forth.
Okay, Mr. Kajewski, did you understand the question? Basically, a definition of considering on line 2.16.
Madam Chair, members, looking at line 2.16 and the what's the meaning of considering, I would guess that, from my experience, the agency would take a look at, number one, the work that they've previously done, Two, their resume and the resume system that they currently have on employees who apply for jobs, if not any resume that's maintained in their personnel files for qualifications.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Representative Nelson?
I just wanted to ask for a roll call.
A roll call has been requested. Are you satisfied, Representative Hancock? Okay, a roll call having been requested by Representative Nelson, there will be a roll call. Clerk will take the roll.
Representative Pepin?
Aye.
Representative Murray.
Aye.
Representative Nelson.
No.
Representative Green.
No.
Representative Hancock.
Aye.
Representative Hornstein.
No.
Representative McFarland.
Aye.
Representative O'Driscoll.
Aye.
Representative Simon.
No.
Representative Quam.
Aye.
Representative Sanders.
Aye.
Representative Scalzi.
No.
Representative Winkler.
No.
Okay. There being seven ayes and six nays, the motion does prevail, and House File 1975 will be referred to State Government Finance. Thank you. And you can stay there because the next bill is also yours, House File 1976.
Madam Chair and members.
Hold on just a second. We have to put your bill in
proper
form. Representative Murray.
Madam Chair, I would move that House File 1976 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Government Finance.
Thank you. To your bill, Representative Brasikowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair and members, House File 1976 would simply require that new hires in the legislative, executive, and judicial branches are submitted to the e-verify process to make certain that the people who we are hiring in state government are here legally and can legally be employed in the United States. Really, that's the essence of the bill. Members, just for the background I've done on E-Verify, it's, you know, E-Verify is utilizing information between the Department of Homeland Security and the Social Security Administration. It takes employers about, I've talked to several people, anywhere from 4 to 6 minutes per application in order to run it through E-Verify. It comes at no cost to the employer, and simply is done through a computer interface where the user, which is an HR person normally, takes the normal I-9 form and takes some information from that and plugs it into the internet site. Usually it's the driver's license and Social Security number, but there are other documents that can be used as well. So that's a little bit on E-Verify. I do have some information. I haven't made copies for members, but we do know that Governor Pawlenty had actually required through executive order all state employees to and all government contracts to be under E-Verify, and then that executive order was lifted when Governor Dayton took office, and then the additional part of the history is last year in the budget resolution, there was an agreement that we would submit e-verifying to all state contracts over $50,000. So that's where we're at right now, members.
Do you have any witnesses?
I do not, Madam Chair.
Okay, well, I'll take some questions if anyone has any. Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And in my following of e-verify, and I know we want, when we hire employees, we want to make sure that they are documented workers and they are properly able to work in the United States. I don't think any of us are opposed to that. We have systems in place to do that. Some of the legislation I've carried in the past has been to go after ways that people get around that system through misclassifying them as independent contractors that don't have to go through the verification process. But I guess the question I have is my reading and following this in the news that there's been issues and problems with false negatives. There are people come up as that they're not supposed to be here, but they really are, and that the system has not been fully vetted, and there's been all sorts of issues with it. Do you know if those issues have been taken care of? Do you have any evidence to that effect? I mean, are we going to be going into this and having all sorts of problems with it? I know a lot of employers have pulled away from using it because, again, these problems that they've had. So do you have any information about that and that can be provided to the committee?
Representative Roskowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Nelson, yes, I do have a handout here. I don't know if we have additional copies of this. Margaret, do we have additional copies of this handout that we could make for the committee? I think that might be helpful if we could get that. 98.3% of employees are automatically confirmed when they go through. It takes about 5 seconds for the confirmation to happen after they hit the submit button. And those are, so I do know from the folks I've talked to, with those people who are not confirmed, obviously there's additional documentation follow-up. And so if there is additional time required, it's with that very small percentage of folks who don't meet that instant submission threshold. And those are the ones certainly we want to spend our time in following up further anyway. I would add, Madam Chair, that there are forms of this bill in about 17 different states in the U.S., so that's if that's helpful for the committee.
Thank you. Representative Winkler. Any other questions at this time? Okay, we do have a witness, looks like, that wants to testify. Now we have Carolyn Jackson. Welcome to the committee.
Good morning, and thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Carolyn Jackson, and I am the lobbying coordinator for the ACLU of Minnesota. The ACLU of Minnesota is a privately funded nonprofit organization with over 8,500 members statewide. Our mission is to protect the Bill of Rights in the United States and Minnesota constitutions. One of our basic civil liberties is the right of due process. House File 1976, which mandates use of the federal E-Verify program for all state employees, raises serious questions of due process. The government cannot deprive a person of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. This includes depriving a person of employment because of E-Verify, so they would otherwise have been qualified but for a negative hit on E-Verify. Due process means the affected person is given notice, a hearing of their objection, a set of stable rules by which a decision is made, and the chance to appeal the decision to a neutral authority. E-Verify contains none of these things. What E-Verify does contain is serious errors. The ACLU opposes mandatory use of E-Verify because it poses unacceptable threats to Minnesota workers' privacy rights by increasing the risk of data surveillance and identity theft. We oppose it because data errors in the Social Security Administration and Department of Homeland Security files will wrongly delay or block the start of employment for lawful American workers and may lead to discrimination. We oppose it because E-Verify lacks sufficient due process procedures to protect workers injured by such data errors. And we oppose it because it will lead to rampant employer misuse in both accidental and calculated ways. And I want to talk about where it's been employed in other states. In American cities and states where E-Verify has been implemented, the results have been disastrous. A survey of 376 immigrant workers in Arizona, where use of E-Verify is required, found that 33.5% were fired immediately after receiving a tentative non-confirmation, which is a negative hit on E-Verify, and never given a chance to correct errors in the system. Furthermore, not one of those workers was notified by the employer, as was required by law, that they had the right to appeal the E-Verify finding. When Los Angeles County audited its use of E-Verify for 2008-2009, it found that 87% of its E-Verify findings were erroneous. Implementing this system would be a train wreck for Minnesota workers. E-Verify is a classic example of an incompetent government bureaucracy. Why would Minnesota want to embrace this error-riddled system? We encourage you to vote no.
Thank you. Are there any other questions at this time? Representative Winkler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Jackson, or Representative Droszkowski, if there is an error in the data, how does one go about correcting that? Because I can, you know, just dealing with Social Security in general is a nightmare, but how do you, if there's an error in the data that applies to you, how do you go about fixing that?
Well, Ms. Jackson.
I don't know the answer to that because it's not taken care of in this bill. Presumably, the employer or the person hiring would have to notify the person that they didn't get the job because of a negative hit in E-Verify, but experience has shown that that does not happen.
Representative Winkler.
Madam Chair, I guess the question would go to Representative Droszkowski. How do we provide some of those protections, and why don't you have anything related to data errors or appeals, et cetera, in the bill, or why would that not be necessary?
Representative Droszkowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Winkler, it's certainly something I think we should probably pursue with the bill. Be interested in talking with you about taking a look at that.
Representative Winkler.
Madam Chair, Representative Droszkowski, so you would want us to pass a bill out of the Government Operations Committee without addressing how the operations of this system would be implemented? I mean, it seems to me if you're serious about addressing some of these concerns, then we shouldn't pass the bill out of the committee today.
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Winkler. Representative Winkler, I believe that the agencies have a process for doing that. I'd be interested in taking a look at to make certain that those are adequate. I assume they are adequate. I expect they're adequate. And I don't see any reason that they wouldn't apply the same approach that they use for other situations where people are determined ineligible for employment.
Madam Chair, Representative Drazkowski, I admire your assumptions and expectations that state government is doing everything right. I'm a little surprised by it, but I appreciate that your sentiments seem to have changed. I don't necessarily share that assumption, given the concerns raised about data errors, and you had, you know, acknowledged, I mean, and I don't know where your numbers come from, but if 1.7% are an error, that could affect a lot of people, and if there's an error in the data, and we don't know how that data, that error could be corrected or how an appeal could be made, then it seems to me we shouldn't be passing a bill out of the committee that's supposed to oversee how the state government operates before we do that. So I, you know, if there's a way to do this that actually accounts for the concerns raised, I think that would be fine, but I think that has to happen here. So I would ask us not to pass the bill out of the committee until we've resolved some of those questions. And by the way, Madam Chair, I don't see this, but if there aren't any Senate authors currently pushing the bill, probably is no hurry to get it out of here, so we could have time to hold it.
Representative Drazkowski, did you want to comment on that? Are there Senate authors in the works, or?
There are Senate authors in the works, Madam Chair.
Well, Madam Chair, I guess back
Senate
to you. You know, the bill is very thin. It raises a lot of issues about due process, about the ability of employees to correct information, and we've heard testimony from the author that there are errors in the system. And I just don't understand how we could pass a bill out of the Government Operations Committee until we had a better sense of how those things will be addressed.
Well, Representative Winkler.
Unless you share his assumption that state agencies are going to do it right.
Well, Representative Winkler, I think that's the prerogative of the author, whether he wants to move forward or not. We've seen it here. You don't agree that it's ready to go? I think it's fine. I think there's time before it gets to the floor. The next stop will be state government finance, so it's not going directly to the floor. I think there's still time to work on it. And so I don't share your view. You're certainly welcome to make a motion if you'd like to do so, but I feel comfortable sending it on. We send frequently there are bills that we agree to look at more and work along the way, so I feel comfortable sending it on. And if you don't do so, you're welcome to make a motion.
Madam Chair, I would move that we lay this bill on the table and would request a roll call.
Okay. Representative Winkler has moved that we lay this bill on the table, and he has requested a roll call. Any discussion of that? What's that?
It's not debatable.
Oh, that's right. It's not debatable. The clerk will take the roll.
Representative Pepin.
No.
Representative Murray.
No.
Representative Nelson.
Yes.
Representative Green.
Yes.
Representative Hancock.
No.
Representative Hornstein.
Yes.
Representative McFarland.
No.
Representative Driscoll.
No.
Representative Simon.
Yes.
Representative Quam.
Nitch.
Representative Sanders.
No.
Representative Scalzi.
Yes.
Representative Winkler.
Yes.
There being six ayes and seven nays, the motion does not prevail. We are still on the bill. Representative Scalzi.
Thank you, Ms. Chair. I just have some questions, and I don't know if there's anyone here from state administration or any other agency who would like to shed some light on how this might work. When Governor Pawlenty had the executive order, and that was for vendors and contractors, it was not for employees. Am I understanding that right, Representative Drazkowski?
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Scalzi, as I remember it, Governor Pawlenty's executive order covered state employees and state contractors.
Representative Scalzi.
Thank you, Ms. Chair, and thank you, Representative Drazkowski. This talking points, and I don't know where they came from, but it says here Governor Pawlenty issued an executive order in 2008 mandating the use of E-Verify by state government agencies and for vendors and contractors with state contracts in excess of $50,000. So I guess what that is what you said it was for state employees as well. And I'm thinking this bill, and I could be wrong, does this bill cover independent contractors or consultants? So I have two questions. I have who issued these talking points? And then, I mean, where did they originally come from? I know who issued them today. We got a copy. But where did they originate from? And then my second question is, why do we limit it to newly hired employees, and why don't we extend it, as Governor Pawlenty did in 2008, to independent contractors or consultants? So there's two questions. Why don't you include that? Because to me, if I want to hire people that are undocumented, I would just simply be an independent contractor. And escape your bill.
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Scalzi. The bill covers new hires in the agencies, and so that's really all the bill aims to do is to cover that area. The agreement that happened in the budget bill last year to have this apply to contractors over $50,000 is the agreement of legislature, and I respect what came out of that, and didn't really want to wade into that any further. But certainly we can have that discussion down the road, but it's the intent of the author to really focus on state hires at this point. In terms of this handout, staff, I believe, got this handout. I don't know exactly where they got it from, but staff helped put together some points on E-Verify, some informational points for the committee.
Representative Scalzi.
I still would like to know where it originally came from.
Ms. Martin, would you like to? You can address it in the microphone.
I put this document together last year for Representative Leidiger because he wanted data on this specific question about the how well the system was working in other states. And everything on that sheet has a citation either from the Department of Homeland Security. There's testimony from the Homeland Security Department, General Napolitano, who also was the governor of Arizona, and there's everything is there has a paragraph citation. But I put the document together.
Representative Scalzi, thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Chair, and I always like to hear from staff that comes to attend all our meetings, and that helps a lot, so thank you for that. But then my question to the Representative Drazkowski is, why did you not include independent contractors or consultants, knowing what we know about your previous bill, that you don't have a problem with those? Why would you not include that in this, based upon my previous example that saying, if I want to hire undocumented workers, then I could just become an independent contractor, and this wouldn't matter to me. So why did you make that choice?
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Again, Representative Scalzi, that decision was made in the last budget bills, and actually the independent contractors over $50,000 are submitted to E-Verify at this time, and that was agreed to between the legislature and the governor.
Representative Scalzi.
And maybe I just don't get it, but from what I understand, that is not in force now. You're attempting to put this into law. Governor Pawlenty's executive order is not in force now. Am I understanding that right?
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll kind of go through it again. Governor Pawlenty had, by executive order, required all state government hires and all, I don't know if it was over $50,000, all contracts over $50,000 to be submitted to E-Verify. And when Governor Dayton took office, he undid those executive orders. And then last session, as part of the state government finance bill, I believe, the contracts over $50,000 were resubmitted to E-Verify again as they were in the original Pawlenty executive order.
And Mr. Shepard could probably clarify that if you had further questions. Are there any additional questions for members or anyone that would like to testify to the bill? Okay. Seeing no additional questions, I will, Representative Murray will renew his motion that House File 1976 be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on State Government Finance. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, nay?
No.
No.
Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members.
We are back on House File 2007. It was the Representative Kahn bill that was laid over from last week. You may recall we did have a presentation of the bill, and we did have a special out-of-town witness. Hold it. Okay, just checking who moved it. Representative Kahn, I will renew my motion from earlier that House File 2007 be recommended to pass and be referred to Committee on State Government Finance. Back to your bill.
So, Madam Chairman, at this point, there are also a couple of amendments, I think.
Okay. Representative McFarland, did you want
to? Madam Chair, I'd like to move the A2 amendment.
Representative McFarland.
And I'll just make a comment that since the last meeting, Representative Kahn and I had a conversation, and we talked about the work that's been done and is still being continued to be done, and so she incorporated in that this amendment, and so I speak in favor of it also.
So do we need to move the I'm confused. Do we need to move the A2? You move the A2 amendment. Okay, Representative McFarland moves the A2 amendment, and Representative Kahn, you are in favor of the A2 amendment?
Yes.
Does anyone have any questions for either? Okay. And if it's okay, well, Representative Scalzi.
I just want to say that this is the way it should work, and this is why you lay something over and get the work done, and I applaud that the two people have, because that was my concern before, is that Representative McFarland wasn't in the loop, and now she is, and I'm very happy about that.
Okay. All those in favor of the A2 amendment, please signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion does prevail. And you, Representative Kahn, you said you something about another amendment? I don't have that.
Maybe we was there a technical amendment that we adopted before? I think that changed the date.
Ms. Dyson will do the amendment orally. She knows what we're
okay.
Do.
Madam Chair and members, the technical amendment has to do with the dates in the bill, since this was a bill that was originally prepared last session. You don't, on line one, page one, line 16, and again on 118, it refers to 2012. It needs to be 2013.
Okay, well, that's pretty clear. I don't think we need to discuss that. All in favor of the oral amendment, please signify by saying, I guess I have to move that, huh? I will move the oral amendment. All in favor of the oral amendment, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion does prevail. Back to the bill as amended. Representative Nelson.
Madam Chair and Representative Kahn, it's just a study, and I guess I'm not going to oppose the study, but I guess it was pointed out to me since we were last here on this bill that the last year, one of the things that we asked for the legislative auditor, and I have a thing here that they come back to us with, that they study this question. So there's actually a study going on right now that is supposed to be given to us in February of 2012. So why? I guess the question I have, and I know Representative Kahn in the amendment references the fact of going after these, but why are we studying it again after we are already currently studying it? We should be getting this report before the end of the month on this already. So I mean, if this is just a duplication of what we're already doing, and we've had a lot of discussion going on this year and in the past about the government doing things and the state doing things and paying for things multiple times. I think maybe, you know, I would think we should wait for the study to find whether we need to do this study to see what the Office of Legislative Auditor comes back to us with, because they're already studying it. Yeah. So, I mean, we need to do another study of a study.
No, good point. Representative Kahn.
I'm sorry, I thought I had brought it with me. That study actually was presented to the State Government Finance Committee, and it didn't. This is kind of like a continued doing it, because you didn't do very much the first time. This had a little bit of a flap in
state government finance, because Representative, I hate to keep associating myself with Representative Downey, but Representative Downey made a comment about how he didn't think the study's conclusions were, you know, went far enough or were very helpful. They were too general. And then I made the comment that although I hated to agree with my sometimes opponent, Representative Downey, against my very good close friend, Order to Otto, you know, I felt that I had to at this time, which then incurred a lot of bad feeling, apparently. And apparently the Order to felt not only was she being trashed by Republicans, but was then being trashed by Democrats. And there was some tweets and so forth in comment. So anyway, what this does, first of all, this refers to some of the things that are ongoing, you know, the very good work that Representative McFarland did, a report that we're about to get from the legislative auditor on the structure of counties. And, you know, again, this bill, as you've kind of discussed with other bills, this bill has a way to go. And as I discussed with Representative McFarland, we think holding consolidation of counties sort of out there, remember the bill doesn't require you to do it, but saying we're still looking at this, and we've looked at it for a long time. I've got a really good report here from the Outline of County Government in Minnesota, and it has a great date on it. Actually, believe it or not, some things happened before I was born. The date on it is June 1927, and it has a wonderful statement in it. In this book about counties, let me read what it says about counties. In general, these counties have inadequate sources of revenue, are strictly limited in the amounts in which they can raise and spend, are unable to pay adequate salaries or to employ the special talents needed for the best handling of highway work, poor relief, tuberculosis, sanitariums, and other county services. What was the answer? Consolidation. Then, as now, the authors gave warning to those like me, and I hope not like you, whoever starts out today to speak for county government reform must be as a voice crying in the wilderness. Those who come after may see great improvements, but today, though it is rendering some good services, the county is far from possessing that humble and searching attitude of mind which gives promise of real reform. Again, quoting, the men responsible for county government today are generally satisfied with the situation as it is, and the people are either unaware or indifferent to, or else they are content to let things alone as long as they are not utterly bad. And so that's from a voice from 1927. I'll also point out, I'm not going to read this to you, the person who spoke last week, Professor Oftelli, who is much more competent to speak about this than me, had a superb set of PowerPoints from the session that Representative McFarland also assisted with at the One Minnesota. And so there are wonderful examples he gives throughout the city. And so I, you know, gave this to kind of particularly commend page 19, page 15, page 17. There, anyway, this is all for you to look at your leisure. So
thank you. Representative McFarland?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to clarify that I truly feel that most of this movement should come from the grassroots, and the counties are addressing this. They know they need to do things differently, and they are already crossing the boundaries of their counties for programs. So I think continuing to study this is good. We need leadership from the state, but we also need to have the counties be very involved in this process.
Sure. And Representative Nelson, I'm sorry, I guess you must have had a follow-up question.
Yeah, Madam Chair, I just wanted to point out this. the study I was referring to that is ongoing right now is with legislative auditor Jim Nobles. It is not
yes.
the it is not the state auditor Rebecca Otto that's doing it, and we should be getting this month. And that's why I'm saying I know for why we're going to be doing another study when there's already one going on to this very question. But again, I'm not going to oppose the bill, so I just wanted to point that out to me in the correction that I was not talking about state auditor Rebecca Otto.
Yep.
I was talking about this is one that we asked the legislative auditor to do last year when we gave our questions, and that was one that we voted on as they're doing right now. And according to what I have here, they're supposed to be giving that to us February of 2012, which was only a couple weeks left in. So we should be getting this soon.
Okay, thank you. I hadn't been aware of that. Representative Kahn.
Madam Chairman, the most recent update I saw said March 2012, and you note the amendment that we put on specifically refers to that report.
All right. Representative Quam.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Kahn, I think this was part of the materials that were distributed.
Yes.
And on here, one of the pages, Minnesota County's proposed, and it's decreasing it to 10 from, is it 87 now? And then also you show the judicial districts. I guess I have some concerns because I've been familiar when we consolidated school districts and some of those activities, but those are still fairly local. Some of these are extreme. They're larger than congressional districts, and I know how hard it is to travel. Especially, some counties are more difficult than others, depending on topology and the road system. So I have some concerns about top-down forcing of that. I love the cooperative effort and between counties in southeastern Minnesota where they maintain their identity. And I have nothing against voluntary consolidation, but Representative Nelson brings up a very good point in that there's, you've got noted in here this report. You said there was a report that came out recently. On here, I don't see much detail that tells or has the auditor going beyond existing reports, and I'd feel more comfortable if we had that information that's being referenced in here to look at. If we're going to reference something, I'd like the opportunity to actually look at it myself, if we're saying this stuff. So if you've got the material that we're having them reference available for me to look at before I vote. Otherwise, I'm inclined, Madam Chair, I'd like to make a motion to table this bill until we have additional information.
Okay. Representative Quam has made a motion to table the bill. Is there any discussion? Oh, that's right. I keep forgetting that. All those in favor of tabling the bill, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, nay.
No.
Motion does not prevail. Back to your bill. Representative Hancock.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Kahn. And again, I apologize to the committee and the chair. I was with some township officers this morning who are extremely proud of the townships that they come from. We heard last meeting about from Commissioner Joe Vinny from my home county of Beltrami, who expressed a real concern that we not diminish the county lines, that counties were indeed, in fact, I believe, and I don't think Representative McFarling will not oblige me to talk to her magic act to a second, but all 87 counties are agreed that they want to look into this practice. So my question would be, at this time, when we have 87 counties that are looking to move a lot of operative authority back into the local government, local counties, I think they would be reluctant to, in that process, do away with their very existence. What is the feedback that you've gotten from some of the other 86 counties? We know that Beltrami wouldn't be too responsive to this.
Again, very good reason. There are, the quote that I read to you from 1927 about those who take this issue on cannot expect to have people join in behind them, which is why this is a study, not a requirement. You know, I gave examples of things that are very big districts. My good friend, former legislator, Representative Bishop, had a bill that was meant much, went much further than mine did, I think, in moving things along. And his, he had kind of a model based on 19 counties, and he had, and each one had to kind of like had a some commercial center, had a university, a state university's educational things and so forth. And that's the kind of thing I would prefer not to have the legislature do in advance. I would prefer to come out of these kinds of discussions. The reason I put those two out is that I have one great line in describing the bill, which I get to use, which is that, you know, if we organized according, first of all, let me point out that counties are creatures of the state. And of course, Representative McFarland, who knows much more than me about this, did point out we do have one. I said we have no home rule counties, and she pointed out to me that we do have one. Apparently, it's Ramsey County. So, so as always, I defer to better knowledge. But the line I continually use, you know, if we divided the state along the lines of watershed districts, we would be using the lines that were laid down by God at the time of creation instead of the lines that were done by some legislators worrying about how long it took for someone to go. So, you know, that's kind of why I keep putting that map in, because I like that long.
Representative Hancock.
I know that.
I'd argue with that, I guess. Do we have one county representative here that would speak in favor of this study?
I doubt it.
Representative Pine?
I don't know. I doubt it. As I said, the bill has been around. I don't get to tell the number of people who've come up to me and said, I can't say anything publicly, but this is a really good idea. So I'm totally honorable about never revealing those conversations.
Okay. Seeing no further questions, I will renew my motion that House File 2007 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to Committee on State Government Finance. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, nay.
No.
Motion does prevail. Thank you. And with that, meeting adjourned. Thank you very much.